know, sometimes you plan things and they either work out the way you planned or they don't. And sometimes you don't necessarily plan and things work out anyway. Our worship theme for this month of January is power. And I'm not remembering our worship committee conversation about this, but I don't think we planned it this way. But the fact that just 2 days ago, we witnessed one of the hallmarks of our democracy, the peaceful transfer of power from one leader to another, that kind of fits with this theme of this month. And of course, I want to acknowledge that this year, especially, as some of you have already remarked, that transfer feels particularly dramatic. Like the pendulum has swung pretty far. And I know people who were celebrating on Friday, and I know people who were mourning. And then, as you all have already named yesterday, so many people in our country marching in the streets, standing up for women's rights and other people's rights and affirming the power of our nation's diversity. You know, there are all kinds of power, right? The president has the power of that office, including being commander-in-chief of the military and directing aspects of the government and getting to sign executive orders. That's a certain kind of power. Of course, the president also has the power to inspire and persuade. But that power doesn't convey naturally. That power has to be earned. People marching in the streets have power too. They have power, at least for a while, to block traffic if they want to. They also have the power to inspire and persuade. But that power also has to be earned. I hope nobody hears my sermon title today as a call to false unity, as a call to rally around the flag and pretend that things are okay when they're not. There are deep divides in our country, and we shouldn't pretend otherwise, right? The question before us today is, what are we as people of faith going to do about this? How are we going to live with courage and integrity in these days? I chose the hymn we just sang because I hear it as a prayer for this time. God of grace and God of glory, on thy people pour thy power. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage for the facing of this hour. These times call us, don't they, to use the power we have for good. And how do we do that? How do we do that? My answer today is this: by living an integrated life. A good place to start, perhaps the only place to start, is with each of ourselves. That's why I chose Rumi's poem for our reading today, in which he describes our being human as like being a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Anybody know what he's talking about? Welcome and entertain them all, Rumi tells us. Psychology teaches us that the way to healing and wholeness is not by hiding or banishing the parts of ourselves that we dislike or are ashamed of, but rather by bringing them out of the shadows and into the light. The invitation is to own and integrate even the parts of ourselves that we wish weren't there, to trust that if we do this work, then we will discover unexpected power and blessing in those things which we have hidden away. We each have places in our hearts and in our lives where we feel wounded or broken. The question is, are we going to be haunted by those wounds, or are you ready to transform them into places of strength? You know, like when you break a bone, if it gets set properly and heals well, it's actually stronger in the broken place. The bone is thicker around where that fracture was. I believe a community like this one can help you to do that, to work with your brokenness and make yourself whole and strong. And of course, now thinking about it on the institutional level, the church needs to learn about how to live a more integrated life too. Too often, Western religion has split apart body and spirit, light and shadow, good and evil into these false and unhelpful dualities. These times call us to heal this divide, to embrace more holistic ways of seeing ourselves and the holy and our world. On the local level, we in this congregation know something about this work of integration. A while back, some long-standing differences and difficulties threatened to split this congregation. Those of you who were here back then, 13, 14, 15 years ago, you know what I'm talking about. People said and did some hurtful things. And once the heat of that conflict passed, it might have been tempting to bury that conflict and say, as some families do, we're not going to talk about that anymore. Anybody grow up in households like that? But that's not what you did here. You faced that difficulty and you worked through it. And it took a while. It was still going on in subtler ways when I got here 9 years ago, but we continued to deal with it and we learned from it. And we integrated the learnings of that difficult experience, and we are stronger and healthier because of that struggle. Isn't this what we need on the national level too? We have this big problem right now in our country around difference. Some people want to address the growing diversity in our country by saying to those perceived to be different, you just need to fit in here. And there are ways we all need to be one as Americans. But it seems to me right now, too many people in our country are threatened that we are a land of many colors, many languages, many faiths, many perspectives. And one thing I want to say to those folks is that cow has way left the barn. It's not going back in. Just like, get real. Those folks who want to go back to some kind of idealized past, good luck with that. Isn't it this fear of difference that drives some people to say, we're taking our country back? Taking it back from whom? Some of you might know Audre Lorde, who died a few years ago. She described herself as black, lesbian, mother, warrior, poet. She said, it's not our differences that divide us. It is our inability to recognize, accept, and celebrate those differences. That's what we need to be doing these days. Of course, sometimes, especially those of us who have enjoyed being in the majority most of the time, sometimes we tend to want to deal with difference by just pretending it doesn't exist. You can be part of our group as long as you fit in and don't make waves and just don't pretend that you're that different. And I'm all for peace and harmony. But it seems to me these calls for that kind of togetherness right now ignore these differences that bless us and make us so vital. And they also ignore the real fears that many people in our country right now have for their future. So if I needed some hope, and I did, I found it yesterday in what I saw of those women's marches in Boston and Washington and across our country. Over 1 million people in the United States yesterday took to the streets, peacefully, joyfully, saying, "This is my country." I'm proud that so many of our people here went to those marches, and I'm hopeful that we will, in these coming days, find tangible ways to live out our faith, to use our power to help build the common good and make ours a more just world. That's why we're here, right? A week ago, on the middle of Martin Luther King weekend, five of us from this church went to a sanctuary training led by the Merrimack Valley Project. There were 30 people there that Saturday, representing eight different faith communities. We listened that morning to undocumented people talk about the fears they have that these days their families might be broken up, some of them might be arrested, deported. We reflected on what sanctuary is, and people said things like a safe place, a place that offers shelter and protection, a place that's temporary. We remembered examples of sanctuary from history, like the Underground Railroad in this country and the stories of German people who, during the Holocaust, hid Jews in their homes, sometimes at great personal risk. I spoke up and I said that I was also thinking about sanctuary in a religious or spiritual sense. That it implies to me something precious and holy. That I was reminded of these words from Rebecca Parker, "That which is sacred shall not be defiled." I said, in our tradition, we believe that each person is sacred, has inherent worth and dignity, and that we are called to do what we can to help and protect the most vulnerable in our midst. Those words that I quoted from Rebecca Parker, they've been ringing in my ears this week. And so I offer them to you in their entirety as a challenge and as a blessing for these days. She says, "Your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of hands, the reaches of the heart, the gift of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, waiting. Any of these can serve to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. And any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer this question: what will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless the world." The choice to bless the world is more than an act of will, a moving forward into the world with the intention to do good. It is an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of a broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. There is an embrace of kindness that encompasses all life, even yours. And while there is injustice, anathematization, or evil, there moves a holy disturbance, a benevolent rage, a revolutionary love, protesting, urging, insisting that which is sacred will not be defiled. Those who bless the world live their life as a gesture of thanks for this beauty and this rage. The choice to bless the world can take you into solitude to seek for the sources of power and grace, native wisdom, healing, and liberation. More, the choice will draw you into community, the endeavor shared, the heritage passed on, the companionship of struggle, the importance of keeping faith, the life of ritual and praise, the comfort of human friendship, the company of earth, its chorus of life welcoming you. None of us alone can save the world. Together, that is another possibility waiting. I love and cherish Rebecca Parker's call to bless the world, her call to each of us. She reminds us that we are not alone, that we are part of a long and great tradition of people working to build the common good. She reminds us that it's not all up to us, that we have kindred companions doing this too, longing to be in partnership with us, that we are called to create in our day the beloved community that prophets of every age have imagined and worked toward. So let's sing about this. We are builders of that city. All our joys and all our groans help to build its shining ramparts. All our lives are building stones. And then let's get on with it, seeking and finding ways to do this good and holy work, this work of integration, being powerful together, healing and blessing our world together. Amen.